welcome to Peer to Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, William Morales. And on today's show, I have Trevor Mork, who's the CEO of Carat. He's also, check it out, one of the nation's fastest growing companies, according to Inc. magazine. And Carat, one of my good friends, has that website, and she gets tons of leads out of it. So, Trevor, thank you so much for being on Peer to Peer Real Estate Show. How are you?
Dude, William, first of all, like I said before we hit record, I appreciate you. What you're doing here, getting guests on here, but also just educating people and giving people inspiration and positivity. Dude, we need that right now more than any time in the world. So the work you're doing is important, and everybody that listens to this, I keep following William. He has great stuff over here. So I'm grateful to be on here.
No, listen, it's my honor. And for those of you that don't know, I heard of Trevor Mork a couple of years ago, and one of my favorite interviews he did, and you have to look at it on YouTube, is with Mitch Steven, and it was about seller financing, which is my niche. I started getting into it, Trevor, maybe 2.5 to 3 years ago. Cool. I finally, at the age of 55, bought my first physical property. Before then, I invested in REITs and Fundrise and all that, but so finally, at that age, I took the leap, you know? So it's never too late.
Dude, congratulations. It's kind of funny. Right before I popped over here, I live in a small town, a town of 25,000 people in Oregon called Roseburg. Our team is all over the place. We have almost 40 employees here at Carat. 11 are here, and they're elsewhere. But we're buying buildings downtown. And I've been talking about doing that for like a decade. And so I finally pulled the trigger on another one next door. It's a historical building. I feel the same way, dude. It's like, man, I've been wanting to do this forever. And sometimes it's that little bit of confidence you need, or a little bit of mentorship from somebody else to kick you over the edge. So I'm pumped you did that and you're able to share it with others now.
Yeah, no, like I said, when I first saw the interview and I'm just listening to it, and then, you know, he's also a Carat user, and one of my friends, good friends that I know for 10, 15 years is also a Carat user. So I said, okay, maybe I got to look into this a little bit more often, especially if she's getting leads. So Trevor, tell us a little bit about yourself. Were you always entrepreneurial? Was that something that you always wanted to do when you were 5 years old, or did you fall into it as you got older?
Dude, I was never the kid who went to school and sold candy bars. And I think I might've done, the lemonade stand, the proverbial lemonade stand once or twice, but no, dude, I grew up in a family that my dad and mom started businesses out of necessity when I was younger. My mom started one in our basement. She was a wedding planner, and she started a party and wedding store. And now it's pretty big. It's still in business now. They set up big weddings and parties all over the place. And then my dad ended up getting laid off from his job about 3 years later. Mm-hmm. And he'd never started a company. And he was kind of faced with that decision. Do I go start a company and like start my own job, or do I go find another one? And so I think at an early age, I had an example from my parents that, hey, you can, like, that is an option. It's an option to create your own job. It's an option to create a business that can help build wealth if you wanted it to. But the reason I never wanted to take that path, William, until I was probably, end of high school, early college, was I saw how hard my parents were working. You know, it's like we would be on Saturdays, most Saturdays during the summers, a kid, 8, 9, 10, 12 years old. It was a family business. We'd be out there packing chairs with my parents on Saturdays and Sundays, tearing the weddings down on Mondays in the summer. And I enjoyed it because it showed me how to work hard. It showed me how to deliver amazing customer experiences. But I also came away with it going, man, if this is what owning a business is like, having to work on weekends, doing all this, I just didn't want any of that. So I thought I wanted to go the professional route, man, be an attorney or a doctor or whatever. And I'll kind of sum up the story with this. I was in college. I went to college not knowing what I wanted to do. And real estate had kind of jumped up to me, and my dad had really fostered that seed in me early. He taught me that you could buy properties. He had a rental or two, and he taught me you could buy properties cheap, sometimes at foreclosures, and rent them for cash flow. And it was always stuck in my mind. And I got in college. I had this college professor. His name was Ari DeGroot. Just the most like charismatic guy. He was an attorney. He was a real estate investor, and it was a business law class. And he was up there teaching really boring subjects, but making them awesome and really, really fun to learn. And he would teach us business law through his own business dealings as a real estate investor. And I'm like, I want to do exactly what he does. and so I tried to study up hard to get into law school, got good grades, but flunked the LSAT test twice, didn't get into any law school, didn't even get waitlisted. But I did get the other part of the equation. I bought my first rental property when I was a junior in college, a four unit building there by the college. And I still own that one today. So that was kind of my journey from not having any interest in entrepreneurship at all because of what I thought that it was. I thought it was you're bound by the business. The business owns you. You can't find good employees. Like these are all the things that I had been seeing and hearing from my parents. Right. And then you see some good examples. You're like, well, maybe business can be different. Like maybe it can free you instead of being a trap. Maybe it can actually help you have a greater impact. Maybe growing a business and growing a team actually is what you really need to do to create true wealth, impact, and freedom. And so it's a full story arc the last 15 years.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing though, how we see maybe our parents or we hear about having your own business and how tough it could be. But obviously, I mean, you took that lesson in a way, but then you perfected it to fit your brand, you know, the Trevor Mork brand, because now, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you have the Carrot websites, you know, you have that four unit property. I want to touch base on that. When you got the four unit, the question I always get asked is, how do you fund it? So if you don't mind me touching base on that, how did you fund it, that first deal?
Yeah, dude, I'll walk through that and even the most recent one. I own several properties that are rental properties, VRBOs, apartments, and now commercial. Mm-hmm. And so that first one, dude, was owner finance, right? It was. I had started to do a bunch of research on the internet in the college library because I didn't really... I didn't have a computer at home at that time. I graduated college in 2005. And at that time, dude, the internet was just a place for me to research papers. Like I didn't use it for buying stuff.
Very true.
And so I got onto some forums. I saw that wholesaling was a thing that people were doing. So I thought I wanted to do wholesaling at that time. And this is right before, of course, the crash. It's real estate was popping at this time, right? You know, 2004 or five. And I started to study wholesaling. For me, what I didn't like, and I'll back into the financing part of it. For me, why wholesaling wasn't right for me is I realized wholesaling was just another job. Like wholesaling wasn't the end. It was a means to an end. It was crank through active income. So then you can hopefully put it into something that gives you more passive income and wealth. And I'm like, well, I want to use my active work hours for something I really am passionate about and enjoy. But I do like real estate as a wealth building activity, but I don't like it as a active business activity.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's when I'm like, well, maybe wholesaling is not right for me, but buying rental properties is. But I don't have any money. Now, at that time, I didn't have any credit cards. I didn't have bad credit. I had no credit, right? I just had zero credit. And so then I would try to figure out, how do I buy a property when I have $600 in the bank account and I have zero credit? Well, you can do it by writing a bunch of letters to people that might have properties that fit your criteria that have owned them for, at that time, I was writing letters to people that had owned those properties for longer than 15 years. There were multi-unit sub 10 units in this small town in Oregon. There wasn't a lot of them.
Right.
And I got a couple people answer back, and I ended up closing a deal with this person who was in retirement, didn't want to deal with the four units and tenants and toilets anymore. Didn't want the big chunk of cash. And so he kind of saw me in him, I think, a younger version of it. And he said, well, I'd be willing to sell this to you. And I negotiated at price. And he said, but what I need is $10,000 down to show that you're real and you're going to make this happen. Mm. And so the purchase price is $174,000. This is in 2004. A four unit building. It's always been fully rented. It doesn't have any problems. He carried back $164,000 note at that time at 6.5%. Since I've renegotiated it twice, it's about 4.2% right now. And I'm still paying that same seller. So it's cash flowed from day one.
You know, and that's the thing. You looked at the problem. This guy wanted to get out and you found, now, if you don't mind me, like the 10,000, how did you gather that amount? Yep. Especially someone, like you said, you're starting out, you're a young man and you only had $600 in the bank. Mm-hmm. How were you able to get that money, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, great question. So private money before I knew what private money was.
Wow.
And this is one of those things too, right, where someone could be listening to this and going, well, of course he was able to close that deal because he could reach out to his parents and get a $10,000 loan. which that's what I did. I came back with the deal. I knew my dad was interested in real estate. He had a couple rental properties, and I knew he wouldn't do it as a gift for me, but if I made it make so much sense for them that it'd be crazy for them not to take that 10 grand and loan it to me, that I could sway them my way. And yeah. So that's what I did. I heard them talking at dinner one night, and they were talking about some investment stuff not doing well, and this CD over here earning whatever low percent. I'm like, well, I've got this thing I'm working on that instead of earning the 2% you're earning, you can earn 6.5% on it. What do you guys think about that? And so they liked it. They looked at the numbers and it worked. That was the first experience I had with that. I paid that part of the loan off early because I just wanted to get my parents the money back.
So sure, sure.
Family part of it. But there's probably going to be people saying, well, I don't have a parent that can write me a $10,000 check. Guys, that's such a big limiting belief, okay? I had my own limiting beliefs, and I still do. Back then it was age. Well, shoot, a seller's not going to take me seriously because I was 21 years old. Or shoot, how am I going to ever buy a property because I don't have any money? Like, there's a million limiting beliefs that will pop up for you. You have to look ahead and go, has there anyone ever in my situation been able to surmount this? Has there anyone ever, 21 years old, ever bought a rental property with none of their own money? The answer is yes. Okay, well, then this is a false limiting belief in my mind. It's not a real fact. It's a false limiting belief. And so as soon as I was able to recognize those and find a way to get over limiting beliefs, I'm like, okay, is this an internal false belief or is this fact? And then I could start to go down with that. Well, shoot, my parents won't loan me 10K. Well, is that a fact or is it a false internal limiting belief? Let me deliver what would make sense for them. And so if you guys are going, well, I don't have that a parent with 10K, is that a fact? Has anyone ever been able to get private money from somebody at your age, at your experience level, whatever it is, and close a deal? The answer is 100% yes. So you definitely have a false limiting belief you need to work through. You can find the money if the deal is good enough.
No, and that's the thing. You had a property that was worth or being sold for $174. Mm-hmm. The owner wanted $10,000 down, and you could put, you know this better than I do. You could put your parents or anybody else on first lien position. Yep. I'm like, hey, listen, if I don't pay this, you could take the property, or at least if not take the record, you didn't own it free and clear, but they, at least they have some type of asset there. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yep, for sure. They had a second position on it because the seller had
the first, right?
Yep, but similar with this building that I just bought in January. So it's a commercial building. You know, I'm here in downtown. We have an 8,000 square foot entrepreneur co-work space here that I'm in that I own.
Okay,
and then right next door is another historical building that came up for sale, and the property has been under the same owners for decades. This store, which is such a bummer, William, it was the longest standing store in the entire city. It had been open since 1906. And wow. It was a retail store. It went out of business last year. It was such a bummer. Not because the business wasn't good, it's because the owner that took over from the previous owners, he drove it into the ground. So it wasn't a good business.
Wow. Person.
So we see it, we're like, you know what, we don't want another vape shop or a pot shop to move in there. So we're going to buy this thing, but we need to find a good creative way to make it happen because I don't want to plunk down, you know, $375,000 in this property. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet.
Right.
We hit up the seller, cast a good vision for how we want to bring, you know, more retail downtown, not just put an office in there or a vape shop or something. And then we just start to go from there and talk about goals. Like, what are your goals? You know, what do you want from the sale? Are you wanting cash? And he's like, you know what? I just don't want to have to deal with the building. I don't want to go try to find someone to rent it to. And I'd like to carry the note. I'm like, sweet. And so just find out what their goals are. So I bought that building for $365, $10,000 down, same thing. And it's a note at a pretty good interest rate for commercial in this area. It's about 5%, and he's really, really flexible on it. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, and it works, and had a 3-month grace period from the time that it closed to where any payments came in, so I could really hustle to start to work and get some tenants in there while we're working on a renovation plan.
So, you know, I wanted to backtrack a second because you touched base on wholesaling, and mm-hmm. it's amazing that, because not a lot of people like yourself that are in the game talk about wholesaling as a job. You know, a lot of these gurus talk to brand new investors and they just say, get into wholesaling. But you know what, Trevor, I tried it and I hated it. I didn't like talking sellers down to 50 to 60 cents on the dollar. And it's the same thing, what you just said earlier, it's a job. Not only, I mean, besides I have a full-time job and my real estate business on the side, but then I'm like, wow, I'm gonna take a third job. Practically, because now I got to, you know, send out letters, talk to sellers, and then, okay, I might wholesale get a $5,000-$10,000 check, but then I got to do it over again the following week or 2 weeks. For someone that's new that wants to get into the business, what would you suggest though? Because I mean, it seems like wholesaling is so hard. Again, I'm talking from my point of view, I never did a wholesale deal, but I thought the hustle and bustle was just not worth it for me.
Dude, it's such a good question. I think the biggest thing, William, is I would coach people to really write down, you know, their goals. Where do you want to go? What do you want your business to look like? How do you want your business to serve you rather than you serving it? Yeah. So going back to 2012 now, and we'll kind of fast forward in my story.
Sure.
Bought that first property in 2004. And then at that time, I'm like, what do I want to do for my work? You know, what do I want to do, you know, that 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week? During the week that's going to fire me up, that's going to give me energy, that is actually building towards something, that's something I can become good at. And for me, William, I started to latch on to marketing. Like, I really love marketing. I like psychology. I like creating marketing that adds value, that attracts people, that adds positivity. And I started to really learn, like, man, when you learn marketing, you actually have almost a golden ticket to any type of job, right? If you if you become really good at marketing, you can grow almost any business. It doesn't matter what business you're in. And so then I started to really dive into marketing. And then as I started to use that marketing skill set to grow some businesses that I had, another software company, one of them failed, investing in some companies, growing a publishing company that I sold. I started to work with a ton of other real estate investors because of the world and the circles that I was in. And a lot of them were wholesalers, flippers, you know, some of them were buy and hold guys and gals. And what I had discovered was the real estate investors that end up getting burnout in 3 to 5 years are the ones that did not have a long-term vision for what they were building. They were trying to run away from something. What happens usually with entrepreneurs that I find, and I think it's probably most of us, is when you start a business, you're usually trying to run away from something. You're trying to run away from a job you don't like, or an income that's too low, or this glass ceiling you can't get through, or you're... you know, friends or family from back in the day saying you can't do something. So you're just like, I'm going to prove them wrong. And I'm going to show them that I can't.
Yeah.
What happens is that's really, it's amazing motivation in the early days, right? That's amazing motivation in the early days. I want to get away from my, you know, $5,000 a month job, and I want to make 10 grand a month or $100,000 a month or whatever it is. Wholesaling is an amazing way to do that. You know, at Carrot, we have just shy of 8,000 customers and about 600 real estate agents, and then the rest of them, about 7,400, are real estate investors. And the majority of them are house flippers, wholesalers, land flippers, doing all different types of strategy, creative strategy, like Mitch Steven. But essentially, they're taking property and buying and selling it or wholesaling it.
Right.
And so we have a ton of people, hundreds of millions of dollars in deals come through our system every single year. It's an amazing way to create income, okay? But what happens is 3 to 5 years in, as soon as that person gets away from that old job and they went, man, I got systems that got me leads consistently. I figured out how to negotiate. I figured out how to really find good deals and add value to that seller and the buyer. I figured out how to make bring in several deals a month and my income is better than it was before. They then don't have the vision to move towards something. And I think in that 3 to 5 year time period, you know, when someone figures out the income side of it, that's when you see people giving up as a wholesaler. That's when you see people giving up as a flipper or any business for that respect, because they got where they needed to get income wise to get away from the situation they're trying to get out of. And they didn't have a vision for how wholesaling was going to be the conduit to what's next. And so what I would suggest is if you are going to start wholesaling, ask yourself why. Like, why do I need this income? Do I need this income just to get away from the job? If so, I just bought myself a higher paying job. Or is wholesaling going to be the avenue to buy more properties or to invest in businesses or buy businesses? Like, what evergreen income stream is wholesaling going to serve me wholesaling is a hamster wheel income stream that you right. or your team has to continually maintain.
You know, I love that, because at the same time, where you hit it right on the head, where do you want your business to go, right? You know, I think too, and I've done this, Trevor, where, you know, I might try something for a little while and then not see it through. Yeah. And then I realized, shoot, you know, why? Is it because I wasn't interested, or was it just a passing fad? Mm. You know, and like I said, we're wholesaling. I gave it a few months. I'm going to be honest with you. Didn't give it a year, just gave it a few months. But then I realized it just wasn't for me. I realized that creative financing was for me. Mm-hmm. So for you, when you decided, okay, you wanted to be a buy and hold guy, was it, you said that there was something that you said, hey, that was it. So that was your aha moment. When you talk to your students and to your, let's say, team, do you run through the same scenario? Like, what is that aha moment fit for them?
Yeah, what I like to do is, I think one of the best ways to find what you do want is to recognize what you don't want first. And so kind of in my transition from 2011 through 2012, I had a couple businesses before that, William, from the time I graduated college to, let's say, 2011 or 12. That was about 6 or so years. I started a couple companies, and I had learned how to make an income. I'd learned how to make a good, healthy six-figure income. But I just wasn't happy in my work. You know, it's like I remember 2010 or so, we had my first daughter, McKinley. I've got two daughters now. And a
congrats.
The boy sandwich. And so we had our first daughter, McKinley, in 2010. And I remember at that time, I had my home office at the house. And that kind of spurred me to then find this space to get out and start the entrepreneur co-work space to get around people. But I remember waking up many times, even like weeks on end in that time period, where I didn't want to get up to do the work that I'd created for myself. You know, from the outside in, everyone's looking at me going, man, you know, he's got great income. He's got a great family, which I do. I think I just wasn't grateful for what I had at the time. He was able to travel, all this kind of stuff. But internally, I'm like, man, the work that I created for myself sucks. And I do not want to wake up to do this anymore. Yeah. And so I kind of went through this internal discovery period during that about year, year and a half, where I was like, what do I want to do? You know, how do you unlock entrepreneurship and running a business in a way to where it truly serves you and it doesn't drain you. It doesn't drain your energy. And up to that point, I was kind of on this cycle where things would be great. I'm like, maybe it's just me just being crazy. And then another 3 weeks, be like, I just don't like the work. I just don't like the work. Maybe I seem to buckle down and do it because everyone says I'm good at it. They're paying me well for it. Maybe this is just what I need to do.
Right.
And I heard a friend say something about a concept called unique ability. And he said, once you find your unique ability, you need to spend as much of your time as possible doing that. And then you're going to find that work is enjoyable. It's you know, effortless. You're in flow a lot more. You end up making a lot more money. You can have more time, like all those kinds of things. And this concept, I'm like, that sounds amazing, but how the heck do you find that? Because it feels like I'm just so far away from it. And I went and joined my first mastermind that he was leading. So I'm like, I just want to get close to you. That was the first and only mastermind he ever did. And he did it for a year and it changed my life. Mm-hmm. And this one question that was asked started to change my perspective on my work in a big way. And it was, what are the things that when you're done doing them, give you more energy, you know, when you're done doing them than when you started? Like, what things do you love to do that give you more energy when you're done than when you started? And then next, what of those things are you really good at, or can you be really good at? Can you be world-class in? They said, do that. And I created a process called the energy audit at that time. Okay. And I said, okay, I'm going to go through and on a quarterly basis, but then on a monthly basis, take this 15-minute energy audit. Energy audit completely changed my life over the next 5 years. It changed my work from 80% of it draining my energy to 80% of it giving my energy. My income went up by a matter of 15 to 20 times over the next 5 years. Far more happy in my work. And I'd be happy to walk through that if you want to too.
Yeah, no, please do. I, you know, because I, you know, when you hit it I mean, it hit me right in the gut. What is it that makes me happy at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. You know, did I accomplish something? You know, obviously doing the podcast, talking to people like yourself and other people. I love doing that because I learn and just get, and then I feed off the energy like yep. yourself, Trevor. So please touch base more on the energy order because I love that phrase and I'm writing it down. So this way, you know, I have it in my mental Rolodex.
Cool. Dude, so I've got a worksheet, no opt-in required. Like I give away all my internal systems like this that I create because I just want more people to use them. I want more entrepreneurs to be lit up and have businesses that give them freedom and help them make an impact.
Right.
So you guys can go to carrot.com/energy. Once again, there's no opt-in. Just get it. There's a video there and there's a worksheet. And you guys can follow me along. But the basics of it is this, William. Is, you know, grab a blank piece of paper and you know, draw a line down the middle of that piece of paper.
Okay.
And on one side of it, you've got gives energy. And on one side of it, you got drains energy. And so for those of you, if you guys are watching a video version of this, you'll see this. If it's audio, then go to carrot.com/energy. But you've got give and you've got drains. And what I started to do back in that 2011, 2012 period, I recognize, okay, unique abilities. When I can focus in on most of my time being within my unique abilities, that's when I'm going to start to find more happiness, more fulfillment, more momentum, more income. Everything's going to be more flawless. More people are going to be attracted to you. That means I need to first identify what I'm doing that gives me energy or what gives me energy that I'm just not doing enough of that I need to work into my life more. And then I need to identify what I'm doing that drains my energy. And so the first thing I do is I write down a list of on any average given week, what types of things do I do that drain my energy? And I'm talking business and life. This isn't just business, right? Because if you're doing the right things in business, but everything at home is draining your energy, it's like that fuels into your business and vice versa. So at that time, writing long form blog posts, like I'm really good at it. People would tell me I'm world-class at it. Our businesses were fueled by that stuff. Because people would find us on Google. But man, it drained my energy. Like I'd wait till the very last second to do them. But everyone was telling me I couldn't do, I was telling myself I couldn't not do them because that was the lifeblood of our business, right?
Right.
But still it drained my energy. So I'd write that down. And then I'd write this other thing down that drained my energy. Anything with meetings and man, I love strategy, but dude, anything with execution, if you got to give me a checklist to go execute stuff, oh, it drains my energy terribly. And so then I'd write this big old list and I'm like, okay, there's 7, 8, 9 things that just really drain my energy. Now on the next side of it, write down what gives you energy. Okay. And I'm talking, it's important to remember not just stuff you're doing on an average week. What things give you energy that you just have not been working into your life as much as possible. So on my list, it was like, man, working out really gives me energy, but I just haven't been doing it as much because I've been letting the work suck myself into it. What else gives me energy? Strategy, dude. Like I love doing strategy. I'll come in there on the whiteboard, like I'll blow that whiteboard up. And then I just want to walk out the room and not execute it. Like that,
right.
That gives me energy. So I would find myself taking on random consulting clients on the side because I could strategize all day long and they would go execute. I'm like, this is amazing. It's like the best thing ever. But I couldn't figure out how to do that in my own business. So there's strategy, you know, of course, spending time with my family, going outdoors, certain things like that. And there were a number of work things, doing podcasts. Okay. I didn't have a podcast at the time. I'd been on one or two. I'm like, this is so awesome. I want to do more podcasts with entrepreneurs. It gives me energy. And so here's the last couple parts to it, William. Is now at the bottom, and the worksheet has all this. I'm writing it out, just kind of analog here. At the bottom, I want you to write a percentage of what percentage of your week is spent doing these activities.
Wow.
And at that time it was like, you know, 80% was the things that drained my energy, but they made me money. So I had this really hard time separating the two and only 20% gave my energy. I'm like, no wonder I'm not enjoying my work right now. You know, no wonder. So if I can get that, so the energy give is up over 60%. I think that's a good spot to be in life. And what if I did this thing all the time and I could always give myself a gauge and a barometer for where I'm sitting? So I did this for a year or two, but there was something missing, William. I'm like, it's amazing to identify something, but what I really need to do is move. I need to move those numbers. I need to take action on them in a bigger way. So what I added to it was this, and this is what I still do today. And I do it every quarter And this is what I base a lot of my quarterly plan on for my work personally. Mm-hmm. Is now I'll go down that list and I'll go, okay, of the stuff that drains my energy, I'm going to circle one or two of those things that drain my energy the most. Okay. And for me, around 2016, I did this again after I started Carrot. And I'm like, man, writing long form blog posts are draining my energy the most right now. Like I'm staying up until 1, 2, 3 in the morning. And this is kind of where the straw broke the camel's back for me was, it was in the middle of the day. It was on a weekday, really busting my butt for the first 2, 3 years starting Carrot. We're 6.5 years in now. Mm-hmm. And, it's like, man, we got the company up. We're over 6 figures. You know, we're in 8 figures right now a year. And, but it just feels like my business is scaling as my hours are scaling too. You know, I'm working 60, 70 hours a week. I enjoyed it, but it was working a lot. I was tired. But I'm like, as long as it doesn't impact my family, I personally can put up with this. Like I can personally put up with this as long as it doesn't impact my family. So I would come home and bring my computer in the house. You know, hang out with my kids, with my wife, have dinner. They'd go to bed. I'd hang out with my wife for maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes, maybe an hour watching a show. And then I'd pull out my computer. And this is probably 3-4 days a week. And I'd be working until 1 to 3 in the morning writing content for our blog. And we were going out of town to my parents' house that next day, which is about 3 hours over the mountains here in Oregon. And middle of the day, man, up in the mountains, you know, curvy roads up there, kind of ravines on the other side. And 1 second I was awake and then next second I wasn't. And I had my 3 kids in the back, my wife sitting next to me, she was reading, so she didn't really see it. And I'm heading towards a guardrail and it's just like in the movies, dude, you know, where you're like, there's no way that would happen just like that. There's no way that the person would wake up just in time to see the guardrail, a ravine over here. You swerve off, scrapes the guardrail, and the person doesn't get hurt. That's exactly what happened.
Wow. I woke up,
see the guardrail, a ravine over there on the other side of it. And if it would have been 200 yards further, there was no guardrail on that part of it, 200 yards up ahead, I would have gone straight and do like a hard turn instead of just this nice easy thing. And I got out. Stopped. I couldn't even speak. My wife's like, what happened? I'm like, I fell asleep. I need you to drive. They almost killed my family that day. And from that second on, I'm like, I'm never going to build my business off of my own back and my own hours again. I need to figure out how to scale a business without scaling my time. I need to figure out how to not be working till 1 to 3 in the morning anymore. And from that day on, I went cold turkey, William. I'm like, I don't work nights and weekends anymore. And for 2.5 years, I didn't bring my computer in the house nights or weekends. And the first thing I did, I went back and did this energy audit. And one of the main things on there that was draining my energy and caused me to work more hours was something that was critical to our business, which is writing content. Yeah. And here's the last part you do to it. You circle the one or two things draining your energy the most, write down how many hours per week you spend on each one of those things. So I'm just going to say, let's say there's those two things. Let's say that's 7 hours and that's 7 hours. That's 14 hours total of two big things that are sucking the life out of you. Okay.
Wow.
You know, the very first thing that I do every quarter, I do the energy audit and I go, cool. Those two things, I'm going to gain back 14 hours. And so very first time in the quarter, I go, I need to create a process for these, or I need to completely stop doing them, or I need to delegate them. And usually it's me documenting a process, then delegating it to somebody else. And dude, here's the magic of it. Over time, you're going to continually find these things and you're going to start going, well, shoot, I just gained back 14 hours. What over here now, am I going to backfill in with more energy? So 2016, when I did that, took away writing long form content. I'm like, what am I going to add? Dude, I love podcasts. I'm going to start it on podcast. And that's when the Carrot Cast came up and we get 30 to 40,000 downloads a month now. And it's one of my biggest energy givers. So
that's amazing.
This year can change your life if you have the discipline to use it quarterly. And if you follow energy, like as soon as I changed my mindset from trying to be productive to trying to go after energy, then everything changed for me.
I love that. That's amazing. So you suggest that we do that just once a quarter, or let's say at the beginning, should we do it once a week at the beginning and then get used to the process, or like you just suggested, let's do it January, April, September, December. You know?
Yeah. So for, it's a good question. So for me, I do it quarterly as a part of just my quarterly routine. Or if I'm at a spot, William, where for too many days or weeks in a row, it's 3-4 o'clock and I'm getting wore out, or too many days or weeks in a row, I get to the end of the week and go, man, I worked my butt off this week. And I just don't know that I did much that added a lot of value. Like if for me, if I feel like I'm in this little rut, then I go, okay, I got to get the energy out again. So it's, okay. It's either a reaction to you feeling like you're getting your energy drained and you don't feel like you're doing your best work, or it's proactive on the quarterly basis.
Okay. No, that I'll definitely put that on the show notes. I wanted to touch base on some, on the state of the real estate market today, 2020 with the pandemic, obviously what's happening. Where do you see it, in the next 2 to 4 months, if that's, a predictable statement to say, you know, can we really predict what's going to happen in the next 2 to 4 months, especially now, you know? And I want you to explain to me and my audience, what does like iBuyer mean? If we could touch base on those two questions.
Dude, really good question. So to give people context, kind of where I'm coming from and what information I have access to, and where that, you know, where my recommendation or guesstimate is coming from. So, you know, what we do here at Carrot.com is we help real estate investors and agents attract leads online. Mainly motivated house sellers, but a lot of cash buyers, a lot of rent to own tenant leads, a lot of owner finance, you know, just tons of leads online through our website and marketing system. Now, because of that, we have a lot of data, and we have a lot of data showing how many people are landing on websites, how many buyers and sellers are, what are they searching, what's conversion rates look like. And so throughout the pandemic, it was really interesting, William. Literally the day that most of the shutdowns started to hit across the country, we started to see a dip in traffic to websites, you know, buyers and sellers and tenants looking for stuff, mainly sellers going online and searching. We saw a dip of about, it was about 10 to 20% immediately in searchers. Right. And that dip lasted for about 3 weeks, but then it's steadily grown. And there's actually more people searching for buying and selling a home right now than they were pre-pandemic in a big way.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it took about a month and a half to get up to that point. Now, on the other side of it, you have actual people landing on websites and you have people filling out forms. Okay. The first one's discovery. Hey, I'm looking for a solution to buy a house or sell a house or a piece of land. The other part of it is actually taking action, okay? Not only am I discovering, I'm actually going to do something about it and putting my information to call this number. And the data there was really interesting. From the day that the shutdown hit, we actually saw about a 30% decrease in conversions. So while traffic was even starting to come up, the conversion rate on websites was still down a good bit.
Right.
So what we were seeing was, as long as people are, you know, as long as people were in a state of fear or uncertainty around the pandemic, around fear of could they actually sell their house? Do they want people going into their house? Do they want to go look at houses? Things like that. When people were in fear, we were seeing people, some people were holding back and taking the next step to solve that problem because they just weren't sure what would happen. They weren't sure, once again, that they wanted people in their house or them to go to houses. So they kind of, some people paused. A good bit of people did. So around that time we predicted, we said the demand is not going away, right? The demand is not going away. It's actually, if anything, getting heightened. It's getting amplified by the income issues that a lot of people may have in different industries like the service industries. Right. It's getting heightened by a lot of different things. And so in the state of Texas, I've got a good friend, Aaron. He owns a software company down there that's the only source for the certain type of foreclosure data around. He was showing me a bunch of data yesterday where there were these moratoriums on evictions and on foreclosures that happened during COVID. And so right now we're in this weird phase where there's all the stimulus that's come in. We're in these moratoriums where lenders and or landlords are holding off in evictions or foreclosures. But those moratoriums are going to start to come up here in the next 30 to 90 days in many of those states. And stimulus, of course, hit, and there's supposed to be another one coming soon, but those aren't going to go on forever. And so what we're kind of seeing, and this is my prediction, but once again, things are wild right now, dude. It's like we have the election coming up, which is going to make it crazy. You've got the pandemic on top of it. You've got whatever going on in some of the city. It's craziness right now. So this is a prediction, but it may change next week based on something that happens politically.
Of course.
So here's what we're thinking. Number one, the real estate market is still strong. It's fundamentally in a decent spot. Inventories are really low still. So if we look at this versus, let's say, 2005 or six, you know, right before that crash, it doesn't feel like there's artificial outside things propping up the real estate market as much as before. Right. Interest rates are really low, which is propping up part of it. Your interest rates are crazy low right now. So they eventually will come back up over the next 6 months. Inflation's probably going to start to kick in mid-2021, which will impact the retail housing market. But I think for investors especially, dude, there's going to be more opportunity in the next 6 to 12 months for properties than you've probably ever seen in the last 5 years because of evictions and tired landlords. You're going to see a bunch of people just getting tired of being a landlord and income problems happening with some of their people. So I would definitely start to tap into property management firms, start to build a relationship with those people, start to build a relationship in your RIAs, let people know you're looking to buy rental properties or apartment buildings if that's what you're wanting to do. Look at the eviction proceedings in your public records data and start sending out letters and connecting with those people as soon as an eviction happens in areas you're wanting or houses you're wanting. Send those out because that's the time period when people are going to be at the most pain as a landlord. And the next foreclosures, I feel, are going to be getting big. So Aaron, when I was talking with him, the data guy in Texas, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but him and I are going to do a podcast on it on the Carrot Cast here shortly on his data in the next couple of weeks. But essentially, he's saying that there's a bunch of shadow inventory on the market right now, or it's not on the market, but there's a bunch of shadow inventory. Yeah. And he said there's some crazy number, which is way higher than normal, of foreclosure proceedings that have been halted because of the COVID stuff. And here this fall, there's probably going to be a pretty big pop in foreclosure filings and that trickling out through the next 6 to 12 months. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of pain out there. But if we prepare, you try to trim expenses on a personal level a little bit, kind of cut some of those things a little bit, that in the last 8 years, things have been pretty darn amazing in general in real estate and the economy. So trim a couple of those things just as a precaution. And then what I would try to do is start to find private lenders. There's a lot of people out there with cash that have done very well this past 10 years. And there's some very smart ones that are pulling back and starting to stockpile cash for looking for investment opportunity. Find those people, build a relationship with them because they need to find great properties to invest into and they want people to help them do so. I'm one of those people. I've been pulling back, stocking up cash, and we're looking for other opportunities here. And so I think it's going to be an interesting next several months. I don't think in 2 months it's going to be a lot different. Your retail is still going to be strong. I think once election hits, the next 6 months after that's where it's going to get interesting.
You know, and it's funny because I wanted to touch base on private lenders. It's funny that you said that, Trevor, because whenever I get a friend request from LinkedIn and it's a lender, as soon as I accept, I'm pretty sure you might be going through this. They said, we're still lending. We're lending here. We're lending here, and send us your email and we'll send you, you know, we'll give you our criteria. So yeah, you're right. Lenders are everywhere. I mean, if you go to LinkedIn and just put up a profile, or eventually, you know, maybe you create your own online forum, you'll find them. So go ahead. Sorry.
No. And I was just gonna say on the private lender side of it too, those ones that tend to hit me up on LinkedIn are probably the more institutional, like they've got a business that does lending. Yeah. The best ones, man, are the business owner that has a completely unrelated thing that has done well and build a relationship with that person. It's direct one-to-one lending, and that's not their full-time job, but they're looking for a great way to invest that cash. Those are going to be, I think, where the great opportunities are. So the people in 2 years who I think are going to look back and go, man, I did amazing, 3 years, are the ones who really did work on building great relationships with people that are high net worth, adding value. You're going out there and partnering with people like that, or you yourself have a bunch of cash you've been able to stock up. But there's going to be great opportunity, like I said, and great pain, which I think comes with great responsibility. Real estate investors and agents really need to move into this next phase of the market and look at it not with fear and not with, you know, and not with like drool going down their faces going, oh my gosh, Warren Buffett says you invest when there's blood in the streets.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a great time to invest, but we never want to wish it. Like, I never want to wish ill will that someone's going to lose their house so I can have an investment opportunity.
No,
I'd so much rather save them and keep them in the house. And I'd so much rather serve that person. But there will be great investment opportunities, but let's still serve the people that are getting on the wrong end of that equation.
Yeah. You know, because I'm thinking, and like we talked about earlier about your first deal where with seller financing, do you think we'll see more of that where we take over, you know, whether it's a subject to deal or lease purchase or owner financing, are you seeing that upticking little by little? Because I had read a while ago, maybe early this year, that Chase, that's one of the banks I could think of, raised their credit limit to 700. So that knocks out, to me, I don't have the percentage, but that knocks out a ton of people that don't have that type of credit score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anytime an economy starts to get a little bit shaky or there's risk out there, one of the first things traditional lenders will do is they'll tighten the lending guidelines. You know, they'll lower the LTV thresholds, you know, so it's rather than they'll loan, I'm making this number up, but rather than 80%, now it's going to be 75% or 70% or whatever on certain properties. They'll start to adjust in, credit, you know, stuff like that. The thing with all that is there's going to be several dynamics happening here. Interest rates as a whole it's not sustainable for them to be this low for too long. And also with the $2 trillion in stimulus that just hit the last 3 or 4 months, and interest rates being at pretty much historical lows. I got a refinance quote on our house, and it's a 10-year loan. Okay. So it's not a 30, but it's 2.2%. It's like, that's insane.
Wow.
It's crazy. And so interest rates can't stay that low that long. Stimulus has hit many people's bank accounts, if not most of the people that got them. There's gonna be a second round. And what we're gonna likely see is as that money starts to really circulate, the first time that dollar gets spent isn't where the big deal is. It's I spend the dollar at the gas station. That gas station person pays their person with that same dollar. That person then goes and buys, you know, whatever at the store with that dollar. And you can see how it keeps on circulating.
Yeah.
As soon as the $2 trillion starts actually getting into circulation of this extra money that was printed off, plus all the craziness, you're going to start to see inflation probably picking up here this next year.
Sure.
And then to stave off inflation, what happens? Interest rates follow it up. And so I think you are going to find a time when you're not going to have as many buyers able to buy as we have today. Today, it's insane how many people can buy a home. And that's why inventory is so low, dude. It's like houses are falling off the market as soon as they're put on. So owner finance and creative financing is going to be amazing. Subject to, I think, is going to be an amazing strategy moving forward. It already is, but it's going to be an amazing strategy moving forward. Owner financing properties is going to be great. You know, lease option, lease purchase, creative stuff like that's going to be, I think, an amazing tool in the tool belt the next 5 years.
Well, and what you said though before, it's helping people. I mean, if we could offer a solution, because just like you said though, like when I see here in New York City, and I see a mom and pop store that closed down, you know, the first thing I say, I'm like, damn, what happened? Mm-hmm. Were they undercapitalized or was the rent too high? Yep. You know, I agree. It's there's got to be a way to, you know, to help people out. I want to touch on two things. Talk about your Carrot website. Like I said, I have a friend that's a user of your site. I always heard of it, but I'm not an affiliate or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you could talk more about your Carrot website and also touch base after that on your CarrotCast podcast.
Cool. Awesome, man. So Carrot, essentially at a high level, what we do is we help real estate investors and agents generate the highest quality leads online that you can. And so let's say that a person's, you know, has a distressed situation for their house. One of the first things that we all do is we all pick up our phone or we go to Google and we might type something like how to sell my house fast in Duluth or selling a house in divorce in blah, 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 or selling a house without a real estate agent or, you know, in my city. So whatever that is, there's tons of people going online to make these searches or tons of people spending way too much time on Facebook and Instagram, right?
And yeah. So
what we did 6.5 years ago was we said, it's easy to get online. Anybody can get online. You can go to Wix, Weebly, Squarespace, go set up a WordPress site really cheap. Your cousin, you know, Eddie can set up one for $100 for you, whatever. Like, it's easy to get online. The problem that we were seeing with real estate investors and agents is they were online, but they weren't getting results. And we said, well, with the background that we have, how do we now take it and make your website actually get results and get a real ROI? And how do we make it to where your website actually makes all of your marketing, including your offline marketing, work better? And so we dug in, created the technology that helps you rank your website in Google really high for the right phrases that the most motivated sellers and buyers are going to type in. We made it so our websites convert a visitor into a lead at a rate way higher than average and way higher than even web developers for the most part do. And we made our websites technically built out in a way that they load insanely fast, the fastest in the market. And Google loves them. So if you were to go to, you know, Google and type up sell my house fast, insert any city in the country, including where you are, William, you're probably going to find somewhere around 3 to 8 carrot sites controlling page one in Google in every city in America for motivated house seller searches.
Wow. That's amazing.
About 90,000 inbound leads come in a month through our system. About 60% sellers. The rest are a mix between buyers, rent to own, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we have a great ecosystem where we help people get more leads and close higher margin deals through our website system. So on the Carrot Cast, dude, the Carrot Cast is kind of my labor of love. Like, it's an energy thing. This right here, it gives me energy. Like, I absolutely love doing this stuff. And so twice a week we put out episodes, carrotcast.com, or just go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and check out the Carrot Cast. And it's kind of two things. The Tuesday episode, William, is me interviewing a customer of ours and like, how are you having success here? And let's break it apart and let's teach other people how you're doing it. It could be house flippers, wholesalers, guys like Mitch who are doing a ton of owner finance. It could be apartment building people. It's just real estate. And then every Friday, we roll out a shorter episode called Trevor Truck Talks. And that's honestly, it's you do them all on my cell phone when I'm driving to my house. And cool. Those are the ones I get the most comments on because it's whatever's on my mind. And it's usually entrepreneurial stuff. It's usually how I'm building my team or how I'm wading through this tough part of my business or how do you plan better in your business? Or, you know, it's just an array of topics that come up, span business and life, whatever's on my mind. So carrotcast.com, check it out.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like I mentioned already a couple of times, one of my friends has it and you know, and I wanted to ask, and I think you already touched base on it, and she has as a friend of mine. So if I'm based in New York City, but I'm looking to invest, let's say in Chicago, how would that work for me? Let's say I'm a New York based guy, but I'm interested in investing in Chicago. I'm, you know, creative financing. Mm-hmm. So how would that work? How would the Google, you know, SEO work or, you know,
Yeah, dude, great question. So here's a real life example. I'm based in Oregon and I do deals in North Carolina and Birmingham. And so I've never been to either one of those markets. But what we've done is I have partners in those markets. And then what I'm good at is I'm good at our technology. I'll launch a website. I will dial it in for that market. And you know, that's a whole nother podcast, but we have a bunch of training videos on how to optimize a website to have a better chance to rank really high in Google for a market. There is work that needs to be done, but our stuff makes it easier and our coaching helps you along the way. And then the first thing I would do if I were you, I'd launch a website. I would go through, dial it in for Chicago. So it doesn't matter where you're sitting when you launch the website. It matters what's on the website. I'd upload things that add credibility to the website. Cause that's the big thing right now, William, is we're in the age of credibility, you know, with so many investors out there, agents out there, every seller has 3 to 7 options. And so us as an investor or an agent, how do we stand out? Well, the only way you can stand out is by fundamentally coming up with a different offering, which is pretty tough because you're either buying the house or, you know, listing. It's like, there's not a lot of variations of that.
Right.
Or you make yourself the most credible and trustworthy source. And that's what we're really focused on helping you do. How do you build in the right content on that website, the right credibility elements, get good testimonials up there. We coach you how to do that. And then what I would do next if I was you is getting ranked in Google takes a little bit of time, especially if it's a big city or a highly competitive market. So it's probably going to take somewhere between 6 and 14 months to really get a top five, top three ranking in a market like Chicago for sell my house fast in Chicago or whatever.
Right.
So that takes time. But once you get there, it's evergreen traffic and leads that keeps on coming in. You don't have to keep on the marketing hamster wheel to keep that coming in, but it takes a bunch of work to get there. Now, in the meantime, what I'll do, and I'll do this myself, and we'll do it with our higher level clients for sure too, is we have a short-term and a long-term strategy. Long-term, it's getting good, high-quality content that answers people's questions, that ranks well in Google, that builds trust and credibility. That's the long-term strategy. It builds momentum, and it's amazing for consistency and predictability. But it takes time. Short-term, we do some sort of paid marketing strategy. So short-term, we'll do Google ads, and we can get those turned on like tomorrow if you wanted to. And we have a certain methodology and a process that works to predictably get good quality leads at a price that will make sense as far as what your profit per deal is. Facebook ads can work pretty darn good, but same thing, depends on how they're ran. Depends if you're driving them to a website that's really good on a mobile device and converts high, which is what we focus in on. But yeah, you can be anywhere, man. There is a certain strategy and plan to do that. And we have our marketing plan generator. It's a free tool. I think it's carrot.com/marketing-plan. carrot.com/marketing-plan. It's a free tool. You can fill it out. Let us know your experience level. Are you an agent? Are you an investor? And then we'll give you a semi-tailored marketing plan that can help you go get those leads.
That's amazing. I mean, listen, Trevor, I could talk to you for another hour. I mean, it was fascinating. I know the subject that I wanted to talk about, we veered right, but what you talked about, especially about, you know, the energy audit, we talked about seller financing, we talked about wholesaling. I mean, we talked about a little bit about everything, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. If somebody wanted to find you, what's the best way? Besides, I guess the Carrot site, any other tools you want to, or sites you want to promote?
Yeah. I mean, of course the main spot, like you said, is our website, our blog, carrot.com, but then, Instagram, man, that's kind of my jam. That's where I document behind the scenes what I'm doing, or I'll document how we're driving leads with and for customers. So just find me on Instagram, trevor.mauch, that's MAUCH. And I'd love to connect with you.
Well, sounds good. Trevor, you have a book in you. You know that, right? Did you write a book? Do you have a book ready to publish? You should have one.
I'm writing one right now, man. And then I've already got the second one in my mind. I need to actually get the discipline down to sit down and write, though. That's my biggest issue right now.
No, so, you'll do it. But believe me, you've done everything else. So this will be a walk in the park for you.
Well, it'll come out, man. It will.
It will.
I appreciate it.
No problem. Well, Trevor, again, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right. Yep. Bye-bye.
Well, everyone, that was Trevor Mauch. You can find him at carrot.com, or you can find him at trevormauch.com. Trevor, thank you so much for being on today's Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. Really, really appreciate it. You can find me at peer2peerrealestate.com. That's peer2peerrealestate.com. Check out our past shows, our blog, and our resource page. Also, please go to Apple Podcasts. Look for us at Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Podcast. Please subscribe, leave a review. Tell us how we can make this show better. And before I go, guys, just a couple of more things. Do not give up on your dreams. Fight for it, guard it, protect it. Don't let anyone talk you out of what you want to do. And please keep the momentum going. I really believe good things will happen. Anyway, on behalf of Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show, I'm Willie Morales. Until next time, thanks, everybody. Have a great day and stay safe. Bye.